This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, spring is here. Everything's starting to grow. So it's a good time. You know, it's bringing out all the new stuff. The grass is coming out. They're wanting to mow all the time. And I keep saying, my grass ain't even green yet. Let's don't mow yet. But everybody has a schedule. Do you realize that's where we are in America?
To
have a schedule to keep. And if you're on the schedule, it doesn't matter if it's green or not, you have to be mowed.
That is true. I never really thought about it like that, but yeah.
Yep, they've got a schedule, and you're on the schedule, and you lose your place in line, so you have to just go with the flow.
That's true. And when you mow, you know, brown grass that hasn't started growing yet, there's no point in that.
I can't figure it out.
I did hear somebody say before at some point that you have to do that to cut the ends of the grass off so that it starts growing. I don't know if that's true or not. I think it's going to grow regardless when it's time.
Well, I thought so too, but you may be right. They think, well, we'll cut the top off. That's going to make it. The green grass come quicker.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know how it works.
I don't know either, because that's not my line of work, but I know that these big grass mowing companies have a set way they do things.
Yeah.
And they don't change. It's just that's the way it is.
Yeah. And it's always nice, though, when you go by, when you're driving, like, in the car someplace, and you maybe have the windows cracked a little bit or down, and somebody has just mowed their grass for, like, the first time in the spring. Nothing like
yes.
that. Smell of fresh-cut grass. Mm-mm-mm.
That's right. And everybody loves everything has to be neat and mowed. Had you ever thought about that? I know I've went through several neighborhoods, and it's like one company usually does everybody's. And so everybody's lawn has to look alike. It has to be mowed, trimmed. I mean, you know, you got to keep it consistent.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And that way, you kind of avoid, like, because we've all had at one point that one neighbor that didn't do anything.
That's right.
And you needed a map to get from the road through the tall grass to get to the front door.
Well, I'll tell you how bad things are nowadays. On outside of my fence. There's a little dip there, and one time the mowers didn't mow all that, and the city came out and measured it.
Really?
Now, this is a true story. They came out and measured it, and I got a ticket because it was too high out there.
Really?
Oh. I couldn't even believe it. Yes, sir.
Wow.
They forgot to mow that, and I got a ticket because the grass on the outside of the fence was too tall.
Oh, man. I didn't know that was really
yes.
a thing. They actually have a grass
it
police.
Is. Yeah, and I'm on a road, right?
Ooh.
And But that's just the way it is.
Wow, so now you got
I'm
a permanent
sure.
record.
Yes, one of the neighbors probably turned me in because the grass was 8 inches instead of 4.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, you can't have it 4 inches too tall.
So what happened? Is there like a fine?
I had to call the mowers and get them back out of here and say, look, I got a ticket because you forgot to mow on the outside of the fence right there, and that's got to be kept a certain length.
Wow.
Yes.
What happens if you, is there a fine, or do you go to jail, or what happens if you don't
no,
fix it?
No, you would get a fine. Thankfully, they just gave me a warning because it's my first offense. It was my first deal. But if I had left that, I would have gotten a fine. I don't know how much it would have been, but I would have gotten a fine, yes.
Well, did the people come back out and fix it, I assume?
Oh, yeah, they came right back.
Oh, good.
I think the next day. And I said, from now on, you be sure on the outside of that fence that that is mowed correctly. You know, don't leave any of that.
Yeah.
And so I said, go from this gate down to the other gate.
Wow.
And so now they're very conscientious about being sure that it's mowed.
Well, good, because you've got a record now, and so that's permanent.
That's right. I mean, they don't have anything better to do in a small town than to check your grass length. Make sure it's the right length.
I did not know.
Make sure it's tall.
I had no idea they actually had grass police that came out and measured that stuff.
Well, they do. They don't have anything else to do. I mean, we don't have a lot of crime.
That's right. You've talked about the police blotter before.
That's right. The police blotter is so interesting out here. It's never, you know, it's never a murder or a robbery or, you know, it's all, well, this neighbor called about that and they saw this car and it looked suspicious, you know. I mean, it's just little stuff like that, you know.
I wonder if when the grass was too tall, if you actually made the blotter that week.
You know, I didn't check it. I might have made the blotter because they made a record of it. I'll bet I was on the blotter.
Yeah. You should do it again just to see, and you could be famous.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. I don't think I could take it. It'll send me another nasty little note.
It's got to be intimidating when the letter shows up and you see the official logo and the letterhead and all that, and you open it.
That's
and it's
right.
Grass.
That's right.
I'm not laughing at your expense.
That's right. Everything has to be perfect.
Well, it's nice. I mean, it's one of the nice things about spring is, you know, this is when everything, you know, you plant the flowers and you start mowing the grass and you do the trim and people freshen up, like if there's mulch or things like that, they freshen those things up and everything is nice and fresh. And then as you go through the summer and the summer heat, you know, things kind of tend to fade a little bit. So this is really, this is the prettiest time of year because everything is new. The growth is new. The landscaping is all freshened up and it's all nice and pretty. So yeah, I guess enjoy it while we have the spring.
That's right. Enjoy spring because it'll turn to summer and it won't, everything will burn up then.
Yeah.
So now it's the best time of year. Everything's fresh. Everything's growing, like you said. And we've got spring flowers coming.
And in 2 months, we'll be complaining that it's too hot.
That's right. But now everything is wonderful. You know, the temperature is a little cold in the mornings, you know, but it warms up during the day.
Yeah.
So this is the best time of year.
It really is. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And the green grass is one of the things we love about spring. The greenness of money is one of the things we like year-round.
That's right. And, you know, money is an important subject. We can't live without it, so we have to talk about it. You know, it's
exactly.
One of those things.
Yeah, and you got to watch your own, which is what makes it so important because a lot of people, they don't watch their own. They don't really have any idea. They just kind of set it and forget it at some point, you know, if they're in the stock market especially or, you know, other situations where they're not doing anything, they don't really think about it. And it's one of these things that you do have to tend a little bit, you know, like you would normally water your grass. You kind of have to pay a little bit of attention to your wealth management from time to time. And do you find that most people do or don't, or where do you find a lot of people?
I think a lot of people kind of ignore it or they put it off, and then all of a sudden they come to the realization, this is not what I want. I want to make a change. And I think their age has something to do with it. You know, they're just kind of coasting along, then all of a sudden they're in their 60s and they say, wait a minute, I don't want it to end like this. I don't want my savings and my retirement in this. I want to make a change. And that's when they come to us. When they realize that they don't want to leave it in the stock market as they retire or as they sell their business. Right now, we have a lot of people selling their business.
Do you think that a lot of people, by the time they realize that, you know, hey, we have ignored this for too long or haven't really put enough attention into it, by that time, are they somewhat defeated? Do they say, oh, geez, you know, Faye, I've wasted 40 years. I should have done something. Are they coming from that point of view, or are they a little bit more optimistic about, okay, it's
time? I think they say, you know, I've been thinking about doing this for several years. I wasn't ready. Now I'm ready, and I want to do it. I think that's where we're at.
So when people are in those positions, is there a point where it's almost too late to kind of get ready?
No, if they've got enough money to get started, you know, they can do it. You know, you can't, if all you've got is 100,000 in the world, you'd be better doing an annuity. But if you've got, you know, 250,000 or above, you know, you can make this work, even if it's late. Most of the people that come to us have got 300,000 to $1 million.
Right.
We've had several people move, you know, a large sum with us lately.
So situations can change, which might get people in that place. You know, like you said, you know, they may sell their business, or they may, you know, be, you know, close to retiring, or maybe they're starting to get things in the mail that says, you know, hey, you know, as you get closer to retirement, make sure you do this or that or the other things. We get those pieces of mail all the time. Do you find that there's one particular event that makes people say, okay, you know, it's time to do something, whether it's, you know, a piece of mail or maybe a friend tells them something, or maybe they see something on the news that kind of gets them a little bit jittery and nervous, or where?
Well, I think they're friends. I mean, I had a gentleman come to me 2 weeks ago, and a friend of his said, you know, we invest with Faye. We've been with her a long time. And the guy had just lost a lot of money at a brokerage house here in town. And he said he lost it pretty quick. So he came to me and said, you know, I want to put this money with you. I've already lost all I can stand to lose. And of course, we were recommended. And that's how most people come to us. They're either recommended by, you know, two or three friends that they know, or, you know, they've been listening to us. I've had several people say, Faye, we've been listening to you for 3 or 4 years, but we weren't ready. Now we're ready. And so, you know, that makes a big difference.
So how do people start when somebody's in that position and they say, what would you say? Well, first of all, what's an average age you think that people are kind of like they get to that place where they're all of a sudden ready? We'd look in 50s.
Well, they're 55, 65 years old. That's usually the range that we're looking at.
So for somebody who's at that place right now and they're saying, you know, geez, you know, I think I am ready, but I don't know what to do. What are they looking at? What kind of challenges are they facing? What should they be doing right now to, you know, to get things moving?
Well, you know, if whatever they've got it in, they want to get it out. If it's a 401k, they're just going to do a rollover with us. If it's a CD, we've had several people that have been in CDs all this time. I had no idea that a lot of people still have $500,000 to $1 million in CDs, and they're making $64 a year.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
$64.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, they're not making anything. So why would you leave it with the bank if you're not going to make any money?
Well, that's a wake-up call.
I mean, that's a real wake-up call. So I've had several people come lately and said, hey, I've just kind of, you know, sat there, had all these CDs, and I'd like to get those CDs moved. So I didn't realize, you know, I'm only making $64 a year, and they weren't paying attention. It was safe, and that's all they thought about. You know, my money's just there. It's all right. But they're not making anything. It's not going to help toward retirement. It's not going to help toward increasing their income any. They're not getting any interest, so why would you do it?
They're not really losing anything, but they're not making anything either. It's just kind of stagnant.
No, they're just sitting still.
Yeah.
Their money is just sitting there. It's not doing anything. So I've had several people like that lately with CDs that have come to us and said, you know, let's start the program. And that's what we've done.
And so when we talk about the program and people getting in, we're talking about life settlements, right? This is what
right.
People are interested in.
That's what they're really interested in. They know how it works. They've been listening to me for a long time, and I've went over it very, very carefully, how it works. That their money goes to the bank. It doesn't go to us. It goes to Nevada Trust. We open an account there for them, and they can have more than one account. They can have a joint account with their wife. They can have an IRA. They can have a Roth. They can have a traditional IRA. You can have two or three accounts. So they open these accounts with us, and then, you know, we put them in policies. And they said, well, how do I know what policy? We send them an email every time there's a policy available, okay? So we send them an email and say, okay, here's a policy. It's $1 million. Let's say they've got throat cancer. And we tell you how long they've got to live. We tell you what the doctors say. And then you make up your mind. And you send us an email back and say, yes, I want to be in that policy. And then we've already told them what we recommend they put in. We may say, no, this is a $50,000 deal. Or we may say, no, you can put in $90,000. So we give them all these options going in. They know how it works. They know they get paid at the end when that person passes away. They get their principal and their interest every time. So I think that's what people like. They know what they're going to make to start with, not at the end. They know going in what they're going to make. They know that if it's a 24-month, they're going to make 24%. If it's 18 months, they're going to make 18%. So, and they know that when it's all through, we send in the certified death certificate. It takes 6 or 8 weeks for them to get paid. And it's taken longer this last few months than usual. You know, usually in 6 to 8 weeks, we can say definitely you'll have your money. We've had 2 or 3 cases took longer. Some of these clerks are not open all the time because of the pandemic. And we talk about New Jersey all the time. If it's New Jersey, it's always going to take longer. It's just different in New Jersey. I don't know why.
Does New Jersey know that you talk about them this way?
I hope not. I hope they don't know what I'm saying in Texas. But maybe it would help them to get on the ball, you know?
You would think,
Yeah, because we can do a Texas one, and it'll come in on time. Yeah,
of course, yeah.
I know we had one that back in the summer everybody was having trouble with. Well, I picked up the phone and I called the funeral home, and I said, you know, how do we get the death certificate sooner? We're just waiting and waiting. They said, call the county courthouse, not the state. Call the county, and you're going to get it quicker. And we had it in 2 days.
Really?
So sometimes there's shortcuts we don't even know about. But we're looking for them all the time. Now then, lots of times, let's say a man dies. His wife will call us and tell us that he died, and she'll also give us a copy of the certified death certificate.
Hmm.
But then we have families that they don't want to do anything to help. So we have to go to the county or the state to get the death certificate.
Why don't they? Is it just not, they don't get anything out of it? Or what's...
Yeah, they're just not nice people.
From New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're up there in the north, and they just don't cooperate very good.
They do not play well with others.
They do not. And there's been a couple of times I've said, okay, offer them $250 for a certified death certificate.
Are you serious?
And we shouldn't have to pay the family for that. But I've done it twice.
Wow. So you're actually having to sometimes they will not give it up. And so then you're actually offering to pay them for something that they.
That's right.
Wow. That's.
But, I know it's bizarre. But you see, we've had these cases where sometimes the clerks aren't even open all the time at these places. Mm. You know, they're supposed to be open from 8:30 to 5. Well, during this crisis, this pandemic, a lot of them weren't.
Mm. Yeah, that's
and
true.
But then we had some cases where we sent somebody to that state, you know, had them fly up there and walk in, and they said, okay, if you come, we will give it to you. We've had that happen, that we actually walked in and got it from out of state.
Wait, are you serious? You had to actually fly people to another state?
We did do that last summer, yes.
Really?
Well, nobody could get anything. They weren't getting anywhere. And it was overdue. We didn't have the death certificate. So we were saying, well, how are we going to do it? Finally, I said, let me send someone there. Yeah. And we did. Now, and several times we've involved Jim or our attorney, and he would send a runner, you know, a courier. And they would respond real well to him. He sent a courier, and they got it done. So we've taken all kinds of measures to get our death certificates.
Wow.
And it's just been an unusual time because of this pandemic. Otherwise, these clerks all respond. They get you, you know, your death certificates on time and all this. But this is a different time in our country.
Boy, it sounds like you've had to almost kind of get rough with people on the phone.
We've had to do a lot of things we would not necessarily do, you know, to get our death certificates.
Oh, you've gotten to the point. You sent Bruno up there. You know a guy. I need the certificate. I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
That's it, right there. Yes.
Oh wow.
Oh my gosh.
So weird. I didn't realize things had gotten, you know, to that point. It's just, and it's all pandemic related. It's not that, you know, people are just necessarily trying to be mean.
No, it's just all pandemic. They're short on clerks. A lot of them don't go in all the time. Their hours have been cut. They've done all kinds of things. But in the end, we've always gotten our death certificate and been able to pay people. And that's what counts.
That is what counts. Yeah. So that's something that you've kind of had to find ways to work around during the pandemic. Has there been other things during the last, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 months or so that have happened that have been a little bit strange you've had to, you know, find ways around or anything like that?
No, that's the only thing is, you know, just getting them to pay up, give us the money, let's go.
And that doesn't happen every time. It's just once in a while.
Oh, no, this hadn't happened. Remember, I mean, we had to come due last year. I mean, we had three, I think, out of all of that that took a lot longer because we were having trouble, you know, getting the death certificate. And then we have cases where the wife has called in and said, my husband just passed away, and they've been very nice. You know, let me get you the death certificate. So most people are very cooperative, but you got that little 1%. You know, sometimes that are not as nice as their best and are not as helpful, okay?
Yeah. And they're from New Jersey.
And they're from New Jersey.
What's the landscape of policies look like right now? I know that, you know, sometimes.
It's tough. It's hard. We're bidding. These last three that we thought we'd get, I don't know if we're going to get. Everybody. The four big companies, including us, have bid in the last 2 weeks. The bidding is supposed to be over, but we still don't know who was awarded those policies. Bidding is at all-time tightness. It is tight right now. A lot of the people are not selling their policies right now. I think they haven't been to the doctor. They don't know how serious it is. So, you know, like, it always turns loose in the spring, and we get inundated with policies. Right now, there's very, very few coming across my desk. And we're bidding them, and we're bidding them low. We're bidding them hard.
So it's really, really competitive right now.
It's so competitive right now, it's down to the wire.
Wow.
It's like $3,000 between bids. That's how close it is.
Oh, wow. So it is really, really close.
It's really, really close. The bidding was supposed to stop last week. It didn't. The owners of the policies think they're going to get even more, so they helped out, you know. So we won't close the bidding.
So I don't really know the exact in and outs of the bidding process, but does that mean that, you know, where maybe at one point there was possibly some back and forth that might go on? You know, you may bid one thing that kind of like, you know, negotiating for like a house price or something like that. Is it like that? And then now you just kind of go in with your best offer? Because I know you have a threshold where you already determined.
We had everybody has where you can't go over. We know that if you go below that, there's just no profit.
Yeah.
But we're on the line. We bid as tight as we could. So that's where we're at.
Jeez. Wow. What about the other companies? I know in the past we've talked about that there was a couple other people that come in, have a huge, gigantic budget. They blow it right at the beginning of the year. And then after that, they kind of, you know, take a back seat and kind of free things up for everybody else to come in. Is that still in play or has that kind of changed?
They're in play right now. All of them are. They don't have any policies and we don't have any. So everybody is bidding the same policies.
Wow.
So the big boys that are bigger than anybody in the world, they're bidding right on top of us right now because they don't have any policies either. So we're all the four companies, the four biggest, including us, are bidding on the same policies right now. And, of course, usually they're through by now and gone by the wayside, like you say. But this year they're not because they didn't get a bunch in March. Usually they'll buy a bunch in March. There wasn't any to buy in March. So everybody's after the same policies right now.
Do you think it's realistic to think that, you know, as things kind of start to move back towards business as usual over the next couple of months, and, you know, people are vaccinated, businesses open back up. I know that there's been some places where, you know, things are open, you know, completely, you know, statewide with everything. There are other areas of the country where, you know, like restaurants are getting back to, you know, percentage of people coming back to dining inside. And just as a whole, the economy for the entire country, as that kind of opens up, you know, from coast to coast, do you see things kind of getting back to normal?
Oh, yeah. I think everything in a couple of months, we'll have more policies than we can say grace over. We always do. You know, every year. Look how many years we've been in business. We've been through this so many times. You know, the first of the year, saying, oh, my gosh, where's our policies? Where's our policies when we're bidding? And then all of a sudden, it'll turn loose, and we'll get all the ones we need. We always do. Every year, we buy about $60 million in policies.
Jeez Louise.
But we haven't this year yet, but we will.
So it almost sounds like this is just a small bump in the road, maybe.
It is.
And the important thing is that everybody who's invested now, and who will invest, even though the landscape has changed a little bit because of this competition thing that's going on right now, everybody's still like really, really solid with their investment. And I think that's the important thing, that even though this is happening, everybody who is invested, it's solid. Nothing has lost its value. It's not like if you were in the stock market, something like this would cause the bottom to drop out. Everybody is still maintaining and still making money the whole way.
Everybody's still making the same amount of money they were. Everything's still working like it should. It's just it's going to take a little longer to get policies than usual. But once we start on the good policies, it'll work just like it always does.
I don't feel like I said that very well. I'm not sure that was actually a sentence, and words didn't really go together.
There you go. Oh,
but no matter what happens with the economy, whatever happens really in anything, whether it's, you know, if there's an event on Wall Street, or if there's an event in the world, or, you know, somebody just gets nervous and something happens, regardless of any kind of a landscape, and it's really, really, it tells a lot over what's happened over the last 12 and 14 months, that so many other businesses, well-known companies, been around for hundreds of years, or at least over 100, have gone into bankruptcy. People who are invested in life settlements have not lost. How do I say this? Say this the right way for me, because I can't quite.
Well, people that are in life settlements, you know, they're investing in a life insurance company. It's not like retail. It's not like real estate. It's not like the stock market or mutual funds. You know, I have to remind people all the time. You know, mutual funds go up and down. A lot of them lose money and they close out the mutual fund company. We know all about that because we've been reading about Gargoyles, that big company. Like J.P. Morgan the other day sold like $5 billion worth of that the night before it went under.
Wow.
I mean, if you have to do all this night before or the next morning, and you know, you can lose money, you can make money. I mean, it's unsteady. And this is just steady, steady. You know, it's a life insurance policy. It's not going anywhere. It's not going to go up, and it's not going to go down. It's stable. It's going to stay the same. So your investment is always, you know, stable.
The value of the policy itself does not change depending on anything. It is
That's
what
right.
it is, and it's always there.
It's always there. You know what you're going to make. You know how your money's invested. You know that at the end, the bank is the one that pays you. The bank gets a certified death certificate. They put it in your account, and it works every time. Everything is done through a bank, and that makes it a lot safer than if you're, I think, in any other type of investment, because we rely on the bank. Your account is at the bank. You have 24-hour access. You can look at it at any time, day and night. the premiums are paid by the bank, and there are very few companies, by the way, have the bank pay their premiums. We're one of the few companies that escrows all the premium, has the bank pay it, which makes it a lot safer.
You know, you mentioned J.P. Morgan, and that kind of, you know, brings up the thought in my head. Talk for just a second about how life insurance companies have to have reserves on hand for literally, if every policy came due
every
today?
Every life insurance policy you write, you must put up reserves to cover that in case they all came due. I mean, you can't use all of your money for other investments, in other words. Banks put up very little in reserve. But a life insurance, by state law, each state is required to put up reserves where they always have money to pay their claims. And that makes them a lot safer. You've got to be able to, because you never know how many million is going to come due. Like the Cohen policy that just came due about a month ago. That is a $5 million policy.
Wow.
That they're fixing to pay us. So they have to have $5 million on hand.
Wow.
You know? I mean, it's not like a $250,000 or a million or $500,000. We're talking about $5 million.
So
these companies have got to have that much in cash.
That's kind of a big deal. I mean, there's no other institutions that have to do that.
And
so people can rest assured that the funds are there anytime the policy or any policy matures, they have the money to pay out.
I was looking up a company the other day, and their income per year is $10 billion, and they're worth $100 billion.
Wow.
$10 billion a year.
Those are numbers that are hard to wrap your head around.
And remember, it's a life insurance company, so they're writing new business all the time, but they're having to put up reserves. That's not all going to be profit, because they're going to say, okay, you've got to put up a certain amount of that money you took in for reserves against what you wrote.
In addition to that, there's a number of people who will either abandon their policy or cancel it, and whatever they paid in, that never gets paid out.
That's pure profit.
Yeah.
It's pure profit.
Wow.
So the companies that don't have to pay out on all these, that's where your profit comes in. You say, okay, we wrote $1 billion this year. In 10 years from now, will we have to pay that out? No. A third of them, at least, will let it lapse. And they keep a record of this. They have a computer that spits it out and says, okay, here's what percent we think will lapse or drop their policy in the next 10 years.
That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So they have to know about what they're really going to pay out in 10 years.
So they're really, not only do they have everything, you know, for right now, but they have this planned out for a decade.
They have to, because they have to say, okay, we've got to put up this much money. Now let's figure out how much at the end are we going to really pay out? Are we going to pay out 100%, 30%, 60%? And they have a computer that tells them all that. But now what they're worried about, the life insurance companies, is we're all buying those policies. So a lot of those policies that might have lapsed are not going to lapse now.
Interesting.
Because there's ads every day. We'll buy your life policy. Well, if they're not sick, there's people who buy policies that you were fixing to lapse. They'll give them 10, 20 cents on the dollar.
Oh, geez. And those are the ones that you see on TV where the people are, like, traveling around and, you know, they're visiting grandkids and going to the Grand Canyon and doing all these.
Doing all this fun stuff. And they just need cash, and they're going to get cash out of it. It's like that J.G. Wentworth, you know. Get cash now out of your annuities, out of your life policy, you know.
Yeah.
And they give those poor people a small amount and take it and run with it.
Yeah. Those are not the policies that you're very specific with the types of policies that you buy. And I think that is really probably the cornerstone. And you could, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the specific types of just stage four cancer alone, just that all by itself. Forget everything else. Forget about the reserves that companies hold up. Forget about, you know, every other, you know, factor and positive about this investment. It seems like the types of policies themselves are what really make this such a profitable venture for people because we know the metrics for stage four cancer, and we know that these are short-term policies that will generally go 18, 24, 30 months-ish. And so we're looking at fast turnarounds and higher profits and much more conservative approach. Is that a fair way to assess
it? That is exactly right. So when we're doing this, you know, this is a specialized field. Not everybody does what we do. A lot of people will buy policies that are 10 years, 7 years out. I don't understand it, but they do it anyway. Or they'll buy policies that are not even set. How does that work? You're not going to get paid for 20 years, folks, or 10.
Wow.
So we buy policies that are short term, that we know they've got stage four, that it's going to be 2 years, 2.5 years, 6 months. We buy short term policies that will turn, especially when people've got IRAs, they've got retirement money with us. They need to turn their money. They need the profit. So that's why we do just cancer. We've experimented with some of the other, and, you know, it didn't work out too well.
That's a nice way to put it.
That's one way to look at it, isn't it? Oh, my gosh.
All right. We'll go over some of the risks because that's very, very important to do. I think a lot of people know, but they're pretty straightforward. We'll weigh them against, you know, what type of an investor would have to be involved in something like this. We'll talk about what it means to be accredited, which kind of reduces a little bit of those risks and how they kind of compare it to other options. We'll do that in a few minutes. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Blue Bonnets of Texas.
Oh, I've been waiting for this.
Yes, it's Blue Bonnet time in Texas.
Yes.
You know, every year, the Blue Bonnets in April start blooming everywhere. And, you know, there's really kind of a roadmap for this if you think about it. You do the Texas Hill Country deal. You can start, like, in Kingsland. Kingsland's a real small place. But they've got them growing over the railroad tracks. They've got them growing in the fields. You could just take a weekend and say, okay, I want to do the Blue Bonnet Trail. You can go to Marble Falls. You know, Marble Falls has got lakes, hills, rivers. You can explore the town. You can look at all the beautiful blue bonnets. And then Burnet. Burnet is the blue bonnet capital of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're just across the hills, the pastures. They do a festival second week in April every year. Thousands of people descend on the city of Burnet for the festival for the Blue Bonnets. So it's a destination worth visiting. Go to Burnet, see all these, take the family, take your camera, and then you've got Brenham. Brenham is a little ways away, but they have a lot of places to visit in Brenham. And the fields are just beautiful. And it's got lots of places to take photos. And then if you want to come toward Dallas, we've got Ennis, Texas. And, you know, Ennis has got everything in the world. And there's this mark. That's how big a deal this is. Blue Bonnet Trail, go this way, go that way for all of your blue bonnets. And if you remember, they also have all those tulips, you remember?
Oh,
1,000 tulips every summer. So Ennis would be a place to go and spend the weekend.
They got just about everything there.
Oh, yeah. And then if you've got the time, the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center by Austin, they have 900 species of native Texas plants there.
Good Lord. I couldn't even name a fraction of them.
900 species. You can get a guided tour, or you can just go and look at your leisure. But they've got a lot of things that's interesting there. And blue bonnets right now are just, you know, really, really coming into their own. And then, and I talk about Big Bend all the time. There's so many things that you can go and see in Big Bend. It's rough. It's rugged. But, you know, I did not realize it. They have a ton of blue bonnets in Big Bend.
And everything in Big Bend.
I know it. And I talk about it all the time because there's so many different things. And they have these super blooms. You know, lots of times they don't have a lot in Big Bend as far as rain. But they've had enough rain that they've got these beautiful bluebonnets all across the park.
Wow.
And they've got so many different kinds of plants anyway in Big Bend that people should go there anyway and take the family and look at all the gorgeous things in spring there.
You know, we talked about spring at the top of the show. We didn't even mention bluebonnet. So
didn't even mention.
I don't know what
and
was
you know,
wrong with
it. It became the state flower in 1901, by the way.
Really?
That's how long. I didn't realize it was that far back.
Yeah, me neither.
1901, folks. Somebody decided, you know, that bluebonnets would be our state flower. And, of course, they're, you know, all along our interstates, they're in pastures. You know, the birds have taken the seeds and scattered them, you know. And it's just amazing that they freeze, they germinate, and they come back every year. And a lot of them are blue, but, you know, we've got the white ones. We've got several different colors of bluebonnets, depending, you know, which part of the country you're in.
It's amazing. You know, there's a lot of states. I would say probably most states. Most people don't know their state flower. But, you know, the bluebonnets are so... they're so iconic, I guess. It's like everybody knows. It's they're just that special, I guess.
Yeah, and they ask you, you know, not to pick them.
Yeah.
Along our highways.
Yeah, that's.
And then if you're on private property, you certainly shouldn't pick them.
No.
If you're on private property, you admire them, you look at them, and you step back. I mean, you know,
step
there's
away.
Nothing worse than some strangers. Yeah, step away. Do not bother the bluebonnets. They're
not...
there to look at. They're not to pick.
Do not touch the flowers and the plants.
That's right. That's right. Keep your little hands away.
Admire them from afar.
That's right. But it is bluebonnet season. People need to get out and see them, especially starting next week. Go to Burnet, go to Ennis, go to some of these beautiful places, admire them, spend the day. I mean, this is a great deal for the family to get out, and I don't think they'll get the germs if they're outside. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, there's so many great places to go and see them. It's almost like it's you've got to pick one because they don't last forever. And so you've got to kind of, you know, I wish it was almost like they like came in waves and she could like, you know, one weekend hit one, another weekend hit another, and then another, and then, you know, for like 4 to 6 weeks or however long it is. That would be
yeah.
nice. But no.
But the way it is, they're all going to bloom about the same time.
I know it.
you know, starting next week, they're going to be heavily blooms everywhere. And it's beautiful. Take pictures of them. Go and look at them everywhere. There's not anything prettier than a bluebonnet.
Now, that's the truth. That's the truth. It's always nice when you go, because sometimes we'll drive down the interstate or like in the highway, and they'll just be like over on the side in just like bunches. It's really, really, really pretty. And you don't get that
they
in
really
other places.
Are. And if you go to these little towns, you can go out and look at them in the fields and not be bothered. You know, they're just everywhere out in the fields and in the towns. On the interstate, of course, you can't really enjoy them except just driving by.
Yeah.
You know, but if you go out in these little Texas towns in the hill country, you can really enjoy the flowers. Spend the day, you know, in the hills, the trails. Have lunch at these little towns. I mean, you can have a lot of fun there.
Oh yeah, these are like day trips. You can even take a long weekend and make a whole weekend out of it. It's really
that's what I'm thinking. A whole weekend would be fun. You know. Go to at least two of the towns, maybe three, and then pick one, you know, and burn it, of course. They'll be having the festival. You know, it's the second week in April, and thousands of people go to burn it. And that tells you how many bluebonnets there's going to be there because
yeah.
they're going to have a festival. They always have a festival there.
And you brought up Ennis, too, didn't you, I think?
Yes, Ennis also has all those tulips. If you can drive up to Ennis, it's a fabulous place anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's a wonderful time of year, and this is kind of what adds to the spectacle that you don't see in other parts of the country. I mean, yeah, I mean every place is pretty in spring, but you know, Texas is special with all these, you know, different places to go and all the blue bonnets. It really is something special you don't get in other places. So yeah,
that's right. Texas is special anyway. You know, we have so many things that are different in Texas than anywhere in the world.
No, that's the truth. That is absolutely
and,
the truth.
Texans are nicer. I hate to say that.
We are.
You know, I think we are. Texans are nice people. We don't live like the other people. We're not as violent.
Yeah, that's
I don't
true.
Think.
Yeah.
And just relax and take the family, you know, and have a nice weekend and get out.
Yeah.
It's time for people to get out and do something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, safely, but yes, get out.
And you know, it's outside, so I recommend it because you're not going to be indoors with a bunch of people.
Yeah, and you know, this even the smell of spring. Just I mean, yeah, it's all pretty to look at, but even the smell of spring, it's a short season. It seems like it's probably the shortest one because in a couple weeks, it'll be hotter than all get out.
So, I know everybody needs to enjoy spring while it's here. Before spring turns to summer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Very, very special time in Texas is spring. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You should almost put together some kind of a travel package or at least a...
a travel package, right.
A pamphlet, maybe.
See all and do all in Texas, folks.
Wow.
I'm still trying to tell everybody about the painted churches, you know, in the Hill Country. That's another great thing of mine, so it's painted churches from a long, long time ago.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that. It's probably been a couple of years,
yeah,
but that's still on our list of things to do. We need to go take a day trip one day and just see them all.
I know. We need to do everything that's on my list. Boy, we won't be coming back for a while.
I see a whole new venture for you, Texas travel with Faye Bagby.
That's right. Said, how long would it really take to do all the things that I know about Texas? Wow, I won't be back for a while.
No.
No, I won't be back for a while.
And I'm pretty sure even if we started in our 20s, we would probably run out of time.
I think we would, because what would happen is we would find new things as we got there and have to report on those new things.
Oh, geez, you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
All the little things we haven't even touched on yet.
Yeah, and people in those towns would tell us more things. Say, well, do you know about so-and-so? Do you know about this?
Those are always the best, you know, the things that are kind of off the beaten path a little bit that most people don't really know about, that maybe not have gotten attention that they could have or should have. Those are usually the best because they're, you know, it's the stuff that nobody knows.
That's right, and that's important.
It is. It really is. Let's talk about the risks involved with a life settlement. Before we do, though, it's important to know that for anybody that is thinking about investing in life insurance policies, you do have to be accredited. And so this is one of these things where it's almost like you take the requirement of being accredited, you weigh it against the risks themselves. I don't want to say they cancel each other out because that's not accurate, but it really kind of puts things into a whole different perspective when we go over one. So first, what does it mean to be accredited?
To be accredited, you've got to make either $200,000 a year or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your home, okay? So those are the two things. And then we require $100,000. That's our minimum investment.
All right. So when we look at, when we keep that in mind and we look at the risks involved, there are three major ones. What's the biggest?
The biggest risk is it could go over. It may not come in on time. You know, I may say 24 months. It may go a year. It might go 2 years over. We're not always absolutely 100% accurate. So you have to be prepared that if it goes over, you will have to pay the premium. The premium can run from $500 to $1,000. So you have to be prepared for that. our people are accredited, so they can handle that, okay?
But you also accrue for that. You actually have it.
We accrue an extra 12 months, usually, on every policy. So unless it goes over that extra year, you still don't pay a thing.
Yeah, that's important to know, too.
It is important that we've escrowed an extra 12 months premium. So then the second thing is, it's not liquid till it matures. It's not just sitting there cash in the bank. Because you've invested that, we have paid this person for their life insurance policy, so that's where your money went, to buy into that life insurance policy. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. We've never had one go under in Texas. We haven't had one go nationally under for years, because they are so valuable because of their premium income that somebody would buy them in a heartbeat. You know, several years ago, we had one that was having problems, and it sold, you know, instantly. I mean, it was over in no time. So life insurance companies are very, very valuable. There's about three life insurance companies right now that people are trying to buy. Hartford, they offered them $23 billion. They turned it down.
Really?
Yeah, $23 billion wasn't even near enough. That was in the news lately. Two or three are being sold right now because they are worth so much money. People want to get the premium income. They want to buy it. They figure they're going to just turn it into more gold.
Yeah, it's a hot commodity right now.
It is. It's a big commodity right now. So a lot of these companies, you know, they are being sold because it's so much money they can't resist.
Yeah, it just kind of shows the value in these life insurance companies and how much, you know, profit they actually do make, which helps, I guess, reassure. It gives people that confidence again to know that, hey, this really is a pretty solid foundation. It's not like the bottom's going to fall out overnight.
They've been in business so many years. You know, I mean, you're talking about companies that have been in business 100 to 145 years.
Yeah.
And when they're worth $100 billion, you know, they've done something right.
Yeah.
I mean, $100 billion. I can't even imagine. How many banks would you have to put that in?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Can you imagine how many different banks if you had $100 billion?
Jeez. And I know we talk a lot of times about how, you know, these companies who have been in business, you know, for over 100 years are going under, like Brooks Brothers. What else? Was it Macy's?
Well, Macy's is closing most of their mall stores. And they said in the next year, there will be 80 more companies, retail-wise, will be going out.
Really? Oh, I didn't hear that.
80 more.
Wow.
Yeah, it's on the news. 80 more will be going out. They can't stand this mall stuff anymore. They can't stand those huge mall prices. They're getting out of the malls. A lot of the malls are in default right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the overhead has been so huge with a life insurance company. They don't have this overhead. The whole business model is set up so uniquely so that they're positioned very, very nicely in case of just about anything that could ever happen.
And look what they do. They advertise their policies on television. They send out mail brochures. They have life agents, which keeps your costs down. They don't have a big store. They've got life agents that go out and will talk to you about a policy, sell it to you, and they're on their way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that simple.
It's really, really
simple. It's not like a big retail store. They don't have all that extra expense.
Exactly.
And retail stores are going to change. You know, they're going to be in little bitty small buildings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost like a satellite location with just a few things here or there, or somebody to handle, I guess, customer service issues or something. I don't know. But those big, huge malls, the big, huge stores, that's really kind of we're looking at that in the rearview mirror now.
Things are going to change. Retail will never be the same. People are buying it online, and they all know it. They've had a year to learn this hard lesson. Most people buy everything online.
Yeah, that's true. And companies like Amazon were already positioned nicely. They obviously, without signal or something like this happening, they had no idea. But you know, they really kind of set the standard, I think, for a lot of these businesses who weren't necessarily focused as much online. Now they can copy a lot of it, or at least emulate some of the great factors and features about what Amazon is already doing. And so
I think
they're
going to be copying that just fast as they can.
Yeah,
because Amazon is setting up all these places to make their deliveries.
Yeah.
And that's a smart, smart deal. I mean, if you've got all your distribution centers in each state, it's going to be fast.
Yeah. And when somebody's that successful, and it's almost like the landscape of the economy almost forces people into that same direction, my guess is probably some companies are going to be smart enough to say, you know, hey, they're doing this well. Let's improve on the things that they're not quite doing the way they should or could, because Amazon is a giant. And at some point, when you get that big, there's a lot of, I guess, copycats that will come out and try to do it better and really invest the time and energy and research into making it that way. I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's just everybody has to learn.
Exactly. So for investments, for anyone who is not accredited, but they still want to do things, what would you recommend in that kind of a situation?
I would recommend annuities, whether accredited or not accredited. It works either way. And the nice thing about annuities, you know, you can get a bonus. I hadn't even thought about that. But, you know, they offer bonuses of 5 to 10%. Some of them, they offer a yearly bonus. Sometimes they offer a bonus up front. Like 5%, and then at the end, when you start taking out money, they offer another bonus. So lots of times you can get lots of different things with your annuities, like the bonuses and all these different things. So annuities have been around 145 years. These companies are huge that write annuities. They're safe. You can start taking money back out after the first year. And what I like is once you make your interest, it's locked in. They don't take it back. It's not like in the stock market where you make it today, they might take it back tomorrow. When you have an annuity, when you make the interest, it's locked in forever.
Is there one avenue of investment you would recommend over the other, or does it just kind of depend?
It depends on their circumstances. I have a lot of people right now that have got lots of life settlements, and then they think they may want to do an annuity also. So you can have both.
Diversity either way is key, right? You've always said
that's
right.
You always want to be diversified. You don't want to put, like, just one policy. That doesn't work in life settlements. You've got to be diversified. You've got to have several to make it work.
So for a novice who may not be quite as engaged in investing that maybe other people have, for those that may think that they want to do one thing, you're here to kind of guide them through the process. Whichever one works out best, you may find out. Do you ever find out in conversations where people come in and say, hey, I want to do this, but you talk to them and it's like, well, this actually might be better over here. Has that ever happened before?
That happens a lot because we think they want to do one thing, then they say, well, no, you're right. You know, this other might work better.
Right.
So, you know, and it depends on their age also. One of the gentlemen I'm fixing to do annuities for, he is in his 76, and he's doing it for his children and his grandchildren. People have different reasons. In other words, this is money he's going to set aside to grow for his family, not for him.
Mm. Boy, that's really good thinking. That's good planning.
Yeah, I think it is good planning.
All right. Either way, you can walk through the process with people, find out what's best for them, find out what their goals are, find out where they're starting from and what's the best way to get them to their goals, and you kind of walk through the whole process so people can really kind of rest assured that they're in good hands. But they do have to call. They do have to get the ball rolling. So what are we doing? What's the process look like once they set up
their appointment? Well, they need to call, make an appointment, come in, let us walk them through it one more time. And then sign up. We set up their account with Nevada Trust. They bring their driver's license, whatever else we are going to require. If it's coming from a stock account, we have to have a copy of their portfolio. The bank will require that. So whatever they're going to need, we'll have them bring it at that time.
Okay. So one last time, Faye, for people to make an appointment and get the ball rolling, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.